friends, we can all listen to the Sunny Side of Sports.
Great show, bro. This is Sunny Side of Sports.
Right here on the Voice of America.
Voice of America.
This is VOA's Sonny Young in Washington. Happy Friday. Our starting line on the Sunny Side of Sports is international athletics. With just two meetings remaining in this season's Diamond League series before the double-headed finals, the pressure is on the top performers to book their places and show they're rounding into form for the World Championships in Doha in late September. The next round is in Birmingham in central England this Sunday, from where the energetic Andy Edwards will be reporting. Here is energetic Andy's preview of the action.
Well, many places are already secured for the Diamond League finals in Zurich and Brussels in a couple of weeks. A number are up for grabs. Certain of a place in the men's 100 and having the best season of his career so far is South Africa's Akani Simbine. He's shown he can match the best, having won the London Diamond League event last month. Among the Birmingham opposition will be the world silver medalist, Christian Coleman of the USA. But Simbine spoke earlier this season of how racing less frequently is paying off at the big events.
Everything is going to plan for me. I'm healthy, I'm running fast, I'm winning races, which is important, against good competition, quality competition that I'm going to face at World Championships. So for me, I'm really happy with it. I'm really excited going on to the rest of the season and just seeing what the future holds.
There will be a lot of interest in how Christian Coleman performs. The American has attracted media attention in the past few days for crediting Justin Gatlin as a big influence. Now, Gatlin returned after a positive drug test and suspension to win the World 100 Meters title in London 2 years ago. He is banned from the Diamond League, but Coleman described him as a mentor, and that's bound to raise eyebrows. However, the fastest man in the world this year with 9.81 is used to getting the job done, as he explained last season.
I'm just totally focused on me, totally focused on my lane, my blocks, just thinking in my head what I need to do to, come up with the win, just totally locked in on what I need to do. You don't look around, you don't pay attention to anybody else, you got to stay within yourself and focus.
At the longer distances, the world record holder in the women's steeplechase, Beatrice Chepkoech of Kenya, is the only athlete to break 9 minutes this season and looks a red-hot favourite for a world title in Doha. The men's sprint hurdles sets up a rematch between the Olympic and world champion Omar McLeod of Jamaica and China's Wen Junji. Now, the latter won the honours in London last month. Especially impressive is the lineup for the women's 200 metres. The triple European champion, Dina Asher-Smith of Britain, has shown strong form all season, and Jamaica's Elaine Thompson is the fastest in the world this year. Thompson's compatriot, Shelly-Ann Fraser-Pryce, should also be in contention. A double Olympic champion at the shorter sprint, she has also won a world 200 metre title. Reflecting on what it takes to run the 100 at top level, Fraser-Pryce says technique plays a crucial role.
My first 30 metres is kind of my strength as a sprinter. You know, it's how I exit the block. It's my, just how I exit and how I maintain that, that long stride and pushing forward and hitting the track as hard as I can. That actually propels me to run the next 70 meters, as well as I can. And for me, I try not to give up on my strength. I try to work at it and perfect it. And I just always, I'm very mindful when it comes to my starting practice and, my stride length and, my angle coming out of the blocks. I'm just so mindful of all of those because that's the difference between, running 10 sevens and running 11 flat.
The women's long jump features the heptathlon stars, Nafi Thiam of Belgium, Olympic and world champion, and last year's pentathlon indoor world champion, Katarina Johnson-Thompson of Britain. That they are likely to be overshadowed by the world number one so far this season, Malaika Mihambo. The German is looking increasingly like the favourite for world gold in Doha. For the Sunny Side of Sports, this is Andy Edwards in London.
Thanks, Andy. We heard from South African sprinter Akani Simbine in Andy's report. Samson Omale joins us now with news about another more controversial South African athlete. Sporty greetings, Samson.
Sporty greetings to you, Sunny. South African athlete Caster Semenya has said that she has not felt supported by other women in sports. The double Olympic champion was at a women's conference in Johannesburg, which brings together women from different sectors of society to celebrate the Women's Month.
I think it comes more into the international stage where you see your own rivals. They come with this, what can I call it? This rude, you know, responses in terms of me, you know, competing against them, which for me is not a big deal because what I know is that we are all athletes. You know, we should be supporting each other, whether you're losing or not.
Caster Semenya will not defend her 800 meters title at the World Championships in September. This follows a Swiss Federal Tribunal reversal on the ruling that temporarily lifted testosterone regulations imposed on her. I am Samson Omale in Abuja, Nigeria.
Thanks, Samson, and I hope you have a sporty weekend. I'm Sonny Young, and you're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports. On the Voice of America, the 12th All-Africa Games will begin Monday, August 19th in Rabat, Morocco. King Mohammed VI is expected to officially open the games at the Prince Moulay Abdallah Stadium in Rabat. There will be competition in 26 sports at the African Games, including wrestling. 2000 Olympic champion Daniel Igali is the president of the Nigeria Wrestling Federation. In an interview with Iron Mike Mbonye, Daniel talked about the makeup of Nigeria's wrestling team for Rabat 2019.
Yesterday, we had a very colorful ceremony where the team to the 12th African Games in Morocco was unveiled to the Nigerian public. We have 16 athletes in all attending this tournament, so representing the Wrestling Federation. We have 6 male athletes in freestyle wrestling, 6 female athletes in female wrestling, and 4 athletes in Greco-Roman wrestling. So that makes a total of 16 athletes that will be wearing the colors of Nigeria in Morocco.
What medal target have you set for the wrestling team to the All-African Games? In other words, how many medals is Team Nigeria expecting from the wrestling team to the Games?
Well, for me, everyone that is going to this tournament, all 16 of them, should be going there to win medals. So if it is about medal target, it's about everybody winning. So you're going there not only to participate, but to compete for medals. So if I was to be honest, optimistic as I am, it's a view that we're expecting everyone going to win a medal.
When will the wrestling team depart to Morocco?
The wrestling team is scheduled to depart for Morocco on the 21st of this month.
Which countries are you anticipating tough resistance, or which opponents do you think will give your wrestling team tough resistance and tough opposition during the games?
Quite a number of countries. Egypt is probably the number one country that will be competitive. Obviously, the champions in Greco-Roman will challenge seriously for freestyle and female wrestling as well. You have Morocco, South Africa, Tunisia, and even Algeria. In fact, Algeria is coming up really strong now. So we have quite a number of countries that I think are going to be very competitive. Cameroon in some new classes are going to be very competitive as well.
What is the mood of the wrestlers as they prepare to travel to Morocco to represent Nigeria at the All-African Games?
Actually, the wrestlers are in very good spirits. They've had a good training camp so far up to now. We still have another 4 or 5 days of fine-tuning technique before they leave. So from every indication, from everything I've seen of their training and of their moves, they look really good to go. If the tournament was tomorrow, I think they're ready to wrestle now.
That's 2000 Olympic champion Daniel Igali, the president of the Nigeria Wrestling Federation. And Daniel spoke with Iron Mike Mbonye on the telephone from Yenagoa, Nigeria. I'm Sonny Young, and you're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on The Voice of America. Let's take a break now for these VOA programming announcements.
Hello, I'm Carol Castiel, host of Press Conference USA, VOA's newsmaker interview program. Join us each Saturday and Sunday when we talk with authors, analysts, and policymakers who provide fresh insight on topics ranging from U.S. politics and foreign policy to science, culture, and global health. You can listen to Press Conference USA on the radio or online at voanews.com/PCUSA. While you're visiting our website, be sure to subscribe to our podcast. We'd also love to hear from you. Just send an email to pcusa@voanews.com or connect with us on Facebook at facebook.com/CarolCastielVOA or on Twitter at CarolCastielVOA. That's Press Conference USA every Saturday and Sunday on The Voice of America.
Hello, sports fans. This is Paul Tergat, marathon champion from Kenya. You are listening to the Sony Side of Sports on The Voice of America.
Voice of America.
Want to relax, unwind, or charge up? Then listen to Music Time in Africa this weekend. It'll do all that for you and more. I'm Heather Maxwell. I know good music. And Africa is my passion. Join me every Saturday and Sunday for 1 hour of commercial-free Pan-African music of the highest caliber. You get great music, music news, and amazing artist interviews from rising stars to superstars. This listen will take you places. So do it. Join me for Music Time in Africa, your weekend destination.
Thanks, Heather. We look forward to your next Music Time in Africa program. This VOA history note, Music Time in Africa is the oldest and longest running radio program broadcast by The Voice of America. The late great music man Leo Sarkisian created the show in 1965 and hosted it for nearly 40 years before his official retirement in 2012 at the age of 91. Leo died last year at the age of 97, but his musical spirit lives on at the VOA through Heather and Music Time in Africa, as well as at our studios. I'm broadcasting from Studio 23 at our Voice of America headquarters, and the studio right next door, Studio 22, is dedicated to the late, great Leo the Music Man Sarkisian. I'm Sonny Young, and you're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on The Voice of America. In American-style football, the National Football League will officially kick off its 100th season next month. The NFL kickoff game on September 5th will feature the Chicago Bears hosting the Green Bay Packers. The Bears and the Packers are the league's oldest rivalry. The teams first played each other way back in 1921. The Green Bay Packers are based in a city of just more than 100,000 in the northeast corner of the state of Wisconsin. The Packers hold a number of other distinctions. Among them, they play in the smallest market for any major U.S. sports franchise, and they are publicly owned. VOA's Jeff Custer has more from Green Bay.
Some 4,000 people streamed into Green Bay's Lambeau Field one morning in mid-July, weeks before any scheduled game. These were not just any fans, but stockholders in the publicly held not-for-profit Green Bay Packer franchise. In effect, they're the team's owners. They are here for their annual meeting.
This is great that the people of Wisconsin and everywhere own a little chunk of them. I even own a chunk of dirt.
At the last sale, a share of Packer stock costs $250. It allows each holder to attend the annual meeting and vote for members of the team's board of directors. But otherwise, the stock is effectively a donation. It pays no dividends, gains no value, and cannot be traded. Team President Mark Murphy says the Packers' publicly owned status has kept them alive.
The team wouldn't still be in Green Bay were it not for this ownership structure, and we've had five stock sales over the history of the organization, and the first three were really meant to save the team and to make sure the team stays here.
Formed in 1919, the team was named after a local meatpacking company. It joined what would become the NFL in 1921, but by 1922, it was apparent the Packers would have to sell stock to survive. But the team's early survival was also helped by what Packer historian Cliff Crystal calls Green Bay's dirty little secret.
This town never shut down from Prohibition.
I like drinking and carrying on all night long.
Prohibition, which lasted from 1920 to 1933, outlawed the sale and consumption of alcohol in the United States. But Green Bay chose to ignore the law, making the small city a popular place for teams to come and spend money.
But I'm only good at being bad.
They didn't have enough people to support a team. They didn't have a lot of money. And to be truthful, their crowds weren't that big. But visiting teams loved coming here, and they would come in early, they'd stay late.
Following Prohibition, the Packers survived and thrived because they won. A total of 13 championships, the most of any NFL franchise. But as Murphy points out, stock sales for the publicly held franchise did get the Packers through some tough times.
My predecessor, Bob Harlan, often said it's the greatest story in all professional sports, that this small market team just has overcome odds and had all kinds of success.
NFL rules prevent other teams from copying the Green Bay model, making the small-town Packers unique. And Murphy says that's a good thing. Jeff Custer, VOA News, Green Bay, Wisconsin.
Thanks, Jeff. I'm Sonny Young, and you're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America. In American auto racing news, former NASCAR star driver Dale Earnhardt Jr. and his family escaped from a frightening plane crash on Thursday. The AP's Jerry Jordan reports from the southern U.S. city of Elizabethton, Tennessee.
Former NASCAR driver Dale Earnhardt Jr. was hospitalized and released Thursday after his plane crashed in East Tennessee. Earnhardt was with his wife Amy, 15-month-old daughter Isla, a dog, and two pilots. NBC Sports said the family and pilots were discharged from the hospital. Federal Aviation Administration officials said the Cessna Citation rolled off the end of the runway and caught fire after landing at the Elizabethton Municipal Airport Thursday afternoon. Earnhardt was scheduled to be part of the NBC broadcast team for Saturday night's race at Bristol. The network says he will skip the race to be with his family before returning to the broadcast booth next month at Darlington. Jerry Jordan, Elizabethton, Tennessee.
Dexter Lunsford, the sheriff in Carter County, Tennessee, had this to say about the plane crash involving Dale Earnhardt Jr.'s family.
The airplane was fully engulfed. All the people gotten out of it. The fire department did an exceptional job extinguishing the flame. Five occupants, no one's injured. Under the circumstances, we're extremely blessed and fortunate.
Dale Earnhardt Jr. is part of a proud auto racing family. His late father and grandfather were also stock car drivers. His father, Dale Earnhardt, died in 2001 at the age of 49 from injuries sustained in a collision during the final lap of the Daytona 500 in Florida. As I mentioned earlier in the show, the 12th All-Africa Games will officially open on Monday in Rabat, Morocco. One of the featured sports will be athletics. Apart from medals, Ugandan runners are also hoping the African Games will help them qualify for major international events like next year's Olympics in Tokyo. In this encore Sunny Side of Sports presentation, let's listen in again to this report from Magumi Davis Rakawinj in Kampala, Uganda.
Edwin Chinaria, Uganda athletics trainer, tells Halima Nakai, a middle distance runner, to slow down as she starts running in a practice race at Mandela Stadium in Kampala, Uganda. He says, aside from the stamina, runners in this category must control their pace so they don't exhaust all their energy before the final lap.
She was supposed to run 2:25 minutes, 2:25 seconds, but now she's running 18, so, and there was supposed to be 8, so she can't finish up with them. So just because she's feeling there's a pressure of this man behind, so she tends to increase, so she can't finish. That's why I'm telling her to lower.
Nakai will be participating at the Continental Championship for the second time, having reached in the semifinals in the 1500 meters category in Brazzaville, Congo, 4 years ago. She says she'll use the competition to test her ability for the World Athletics Championship in Doha later this year.
It will be a good test for me. If I can make to podium to get a medal, I'll just know my future is bright in Doha.
Nakai has many inspirations to pick from. Her compatriots have succeeded at the Continental Meet and went on to shine on the world arena.
I've seen, like, Dorcas in school, she won a medal. She protested. Steven won several medals. There is Moses Chipsero. So I know I'm talented and I'm capable of also winning more medals for my country. Yeah, because I'm proud to be a Ugandan and I love my country.
Another athlete here is 400 meters runner Nabilia Nasiba. Nasiba says she'll aim at getting the top prize in her category when she competes against Africa's very best.
When you go to those big leagues, you get some techniques. You have to add also on what you have. So even me, I can get a gold medal to be among the first.
And the runners are motivated by training with a person who knows a thing about competing at the Continental Showpiece. The 2003 All-African Games 1500 meters bronze medalist Ronald Musagala.
They have done training, it's already, that's enough. The only thing they have to do just to be smart in your race. When you are going for a race, just be smart. Run your race and you finish. Winning a medal is just, it comes just automatic. As long as you be focused, keep on pushing as I did in Nigeria. I couldn't even believe that I can win a medal from there. But being focused and determined, I came with a medal, yeah.
Athletics trainer Edwin Chinadia says Uganda will definitely scoop medals at this year's competition.
To these young ones, it is a totally chance for them to show off their talent and win medals for Uganda as a country. We have got great names, the likes of Akibua, Nzikuru. We had very many of those great ones. So we hopefully think that with this other new generation which has come up, we think that there is some hopes for Uganda to be great than ever before.
For the Sony side of sports, I am Mugume, Davis Rwakarinjini, Kampala, Uganda.
Thanks, Mugume. The 12th African Games are scheduled from August 19th to August 31st in Rabat, Morocco. The last African Games were held in Congo-Brazzaville in 2015. Egypt dominated the medal table 4 years ago, winning 217 medals, 85 gold, 64 silver, and 68 bronze. Nigeria was next with 144 medals, 47 gold, 55 silver, and 42 bronze. And South Africa was third overall with 122 medals, 41 gold, 41 silver, and 40 bronze. I know our friend Mugume Davis Rwakarinjini will be rooting for Ugandan athletes to do well in Rabat. Well, 4 years ago in Brazzaville, the Ugandans took home 4 medals, 2 silver, and 2 bronze. This will be the first time the African Games have been hosted by Morocco. While most of the sporting action will take place in Rabat, Morocco's largest city, Casablanca, will stage competition in badminton, handball, judo, karate, swimming, and taekwondo. And El Jadida is the venue for All Africa Games wrestling, while Kemeset is where rowing and canoe kayak will take place. I encourage our VOA listeners to follow the Sunny Side of Sports on Facebook and Twitter. My Facebook address is facebook.com/VOA Sunny, and my Twitter handle is @VOA Sunny Sports. And that wraps up the August 16th edition of the Sunny Side of Sports. Thanks to Voice of America producer Bill Werkinger. Thanks also to VOA engineer Sidrak Franklin. And thank you for tuning in. I'm VOA's Sonny Young in Washington. Have a nice weekend, everyone. And that's the Sunny Side of Sports.
I get it.
Hello, this is Peter Clotty, host of Nightline Africa. Please join us every Saturday and Sunday at 16 and 18 hours UTC. Nightline Africa is VOA's Africa's weekend show that provides news, features, and entertainment news about Africa and the world. Tune in. You will be glad you did. I guarantee it.
Want to relax, unwind, or charge up? Then listen to Music Time in Africa this weekend. It'll do all that for you and more. I'm Heather Maxwell. I know good music. And Africa is my passion. Join me every Saturday and Sunday for 1 hour of commercial-free, pan-African music of the highest caliber. You get great music, music news, and amazing artist interviews from rising stars to superstars. This listen will take you places. So do it. Join me for Music Time in Africa, your weekend destination.
Listen to a panel of prominent Washington journalists as they deliberate the latest top stories that include protests in Hong Kong, fallout from the U.S.-China trade war on world markets, and changes in U.S. immigration policy. Listen to a discussion of these and other issues in the news, Saturday and Sunday.
This is Science in a Minute.
The solar system was anything but peaceful during and shortly after its formation 4.5 billion years ago. A new study from Rice University in Texas and China's Sun Yat-sen University suggests odd gravitational data gathered by NASA's Juno spacecraft may be explained by a massive head-on collision between a young Jupiter and a still-forming planet in the early solar system. The researchers say the Juno data indicates Jupiter's core is not as dense and is more extended than expected. The study suggests this massive collision could have mixed the dense contents of the core with less dense material in the layers that surrounded it. Study co-author Andrea Izella, an astronomer at Rice, says leading theories of planet formation indicate Jupiter began as a dense, rocky, or icy planet and later gathered its thick atmosphere from the primordial disk of gas and dust that gave birth to our sun. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
Hello, thank you for listening to Border Crossings with Larry London. This month, Border Crossings is giving away a really cool Voice of America t-shirt. Hooray! If you want to win one of these awesome shirts, all you have to do is make a song request for our show.
I see it, I like it, I want it, I got it, yeah.
Tune into Border Crossings at 1500 Universal Time every weekday in August for your chance to win.
Voice of America's flagship global news program, International Edition, brings you an in-depth look at the biggest stories of the day. Nobody covers the world more comprehensively than VOA. We have hundreds of reporters gathering the news and the views of the most seasoned experts on international issues. Tune in Monday through Friday at 17 UTC and 2230 UTC. We're also available online at voanews.com.
Judd Devermont, director of the Africa Program at the Center for Strategic and International Studies, and Joshua Meservi, senior policy analyst for Africa and the Middle East at the Heritage Foundation, talk with host Carol Castiel about the deteriorating political and economic conditions in Liberia and the reasons behind and implications of growing extremism in northern Mozambique. Listen this Saturday and Sunday on Encounter.
When news breaks, VOA Africa is there. Bringing you news as it happens. Listen to Africa News Tonight, Monday through Friday at 1600 and 1800 UTC. And our five-minute newscasts come to you at the top of each hour. VOA Africa, your trusted source of information.
This is VOA News. I'm Liz Pelka.